You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I am your host, the Football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan, and we are back on this wonderful Monday night. It's spring weather.
Oh, it was fantastic this weekend, Grump. I was walking around with no shirt. We had a NYCFC event at on the Edge in Hudson Yards Sunday, and we were up, me and a cranky wife, and you know, the views up there are amazing. You could see, I could almost see your apartment. It was that far of a view, like way out into Jersey, and it's a beautiful, beautiful weekend.
If I stood on top of my apartment complex, I might have seen your nipples.
Wow.
Why were you wearing, what great views did you have without your shirt on?
What are you talking about?
You said you had no shirt on.
That's no, I didn't.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't.
You said it was so nice out, you didn't have a shirt.
Oh, let's say I had no jacket on.
Okay. That's
we may we may want to start. You know something? Just leave it. Just leave it. that's so absurd and so ridiculous.
I didn't hear that. That wasn't just like a thing I made up in my head. He definitely just said that.
Yeah. No, it was no jacket weather. It was not no shirt weather. I'm not that much of a maniac.
No. That's you know, the dead of August right before training. That's actually at training camp when we're sweating bullets at 10 in the morning.
That's no shirt weather. That first 1 o'clock game on Saturday, you know, that's when we're dying. And I always say, well, wait till December when we're freezing our ass off.
So anyway, shirts on. But you know what? In keeping with the conversation of our underwear here, the Underwear Olympics are underway in Indianapolis. The NFL Combine is in full steam. We already had somebody break the 40 record. I'm sure that's going to happen again next year. And with the Combine comes a lot of it's a giant meetup where you have reporters, you have GMs, you have agents, and therefore you have a lot of chatter. And obviously a lot of that chatter has to do with the draft because they're meeting with these players and they can talk to them. They can have official interviews and stuff like that. So, yeah, chatter is the name of the game this week and this weekend. So chatter in, chatter out. Everything that happens, we end up hearing little bits and pieces of it comes trickling out. And it's our job as fans to take that as gospel, run with it, and talk about it nonstop until the draft happens, and then say, I knew it from the moment it happened. Remember at the Combine when Joe Shane said that he likes spaghetti, and that told me that Caleb Williams was off the board because he does not like spaghetti.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that changed all our boards, and it probably changed the direction of this franchise for the next decade at least, too.
Yeah, yeah. And if only Joe Shane had hated spaghetti, you know?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, the problem is that the NFL, you know, the good and the bad, the NFL has made their schedule a year-round content fest, whether it is we are going to have a three-hour show about a schedule release, to watching players running around in their underwear, to the draft becoming, you know, this three-day spectacle, to, you know, all these different things. And the problem is when you're creating all this content, you have to talk about all of this content, and you have to, you know, you have to stand out in a content world where there's more and more content creators, you know, whether it's NFL Network, ESPN, you know, they're battling each other, you know, then there's all the different podcasts, you know, within each team and nationally, and everybody's just trying to stand out. And we're living in a world, unfortunately, where it's more important to get clicks than it is to actually disseminate real information that's you know, factual and accurate. And that's the problem we kind of have now. And I think, you know, of course, the Giants are always a topic here in the New York area and around the league. You know, they haven't been successful for a while, but they are still a very popular and important franchise. And, you know, the number one topic, you know, even more so than what are we going to do with Saquon Barkley, is what are we going to do with the quarterback position? And of course, you know, the clickbait has started with, you know, silly people on Twitter and even respected names in, you know, the mainstream media.
So what are we hearing? I'm ready for this conversation. You know, we're going to get to the defensive line. That's what the scheduled topic is for this episode, and that's going to be the meat and potatoes of this. But first, an appetizer course of information from the combine, reactions, thoughts, comments, concerns. I am fully ready for this conversation by cracking open this twin elephant beer. I'm ready to listen to your thoughts on Daniel Jones while I sip down this Czech-style Pilsner by Twin Elephant, a small business that you should check out if you are in New Jersey looking for a place to drink beer or looking for a small-time brewery. It's definitely one you should check out if you're nearby, and if you're not, a nearby grocery store will probably have it. And just like them, we are a small business, so be sure to tell friends about us, just like I'm telling you about Twin Elephant. So why don't you tell me about Daniel Jones, the Combine, the New York Giants, and Rich Eisen?
Well, you know, we may be in the offseason for football, but Grump is absolutely in playoff mode right now for his segues. That was fantastic. Rich Eisen. So Rich Eisen, you know, the face of the NFL Network since the day it began, was on a segment on NFL Network where they were talking about five rumors that they've overheard during their stay in Indianapolis. And one of his rumors was, quote, "The Giants are absolutely done with Daniel Jones. The words I heard at the combine multiple times were buyer's remorse." Now, first of all, let's take this logically.
Well, can we take this as a, do you think that's true or false? Can that be like step one? I mean, while you go into this?
I think it is possible.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think it necessarily is because of Daniel Jones is a, you know, a good quarterback right now, can potentially be a really good quarterback. I think it's a question about just the health. The guy who just can't stay healthy, the can't stay on the field. I think that is where they might feel they have the buyer's remorse part. But even if this is true, even if they from Mara down to the janitor at MetLife Stadium all agree that that's the case, it just seems ridiculous that you would be floating this out there to anybody associated with the league. I mean, one of my rules always is when I'm on a team, that we can always have our discussions internally. You know, we can, you know, have our opinions, express our differences. But as soon as we interact with anybody else outside of our team, we need to be united, lockstep, exactly what we want to say. And if even there is no way that they are all lockstep and we are done with Daniel Jones and this is buyer's remorse, and they are announcing that to everybody, because just think about it logistically and think about it strategically. There is free agency coming up. There is the draft coming up. You know, there is potential trades with the draft. There is who might pick someone ahead of anybody. Why would you drop your fly and show exactly what you are holding before all these things happen? I just don't believe, even if they believe that in their heart of their hearts, that they're done with Daniel Jones and, you know, they made a mistake, even though they structured the contract in a way that I don't think it was a total mistake what they did, and I don't think they believe so as well. The fact that they're floating this out there for no gain on their point, there's no gain for them to be saying this, makes me think that this is probably bullshit and probably just water cooler talk by people that are either uninformed or just not part of the loop of decision makers.
That's a really excellent point. I don't see, first of all, it's like, they're not stupid. They know who they're talking to. Rich Eisen, full disclosure, I think Rich Eisen is excellent.
Sure.
One of my favorite people. Love his voice. I think he's just pleasant to listen to. I think he's a funny guy.
I met him once at I was in the subway. It was the night of the ESPYs way back when he was still at ESPN. And I was wearing a Gator shirt, and he walked up to me. He was pretty drunk, and he's like, "Gainesville, I've been there. I partied there and just walked away. So that was great.
Oh my God. In a couple of years, that's going to be me.
What do you mean a couple of years? Might be 20 minutes. So shout out to Rich Eisen.
That's an incredible story. That is just so perfect.
I've been there. I partied there.
Probably the coolest guy from Staten Island ever. Take that, Pete Davidson. Anyway. So yeah, it makes no sense. They're not stupid. They know who that would be like telling a cop you did it. You know what I mean? It's so silly and you get nothing out of it. It doesn't make any sense. There's nothing to gain. They're not selling Daniel Jones. No one's buying him anyway. I don't understand why you say that. Now, if they had said enough for him to interpret that it was buyer's remorse, that would be another thing. But like you said, the contract was structured for them to get out in 2 years. They didn't anticipate him tearing his ACL, a season-ending injury. I think the injury is part of the reason that they had structured the contract that well, but I think the other part of it is that they knew that they only had 1 year of evidence that he could be the guy. I think that they knew that. It was a four-year deal that was always a two-year deal, always.
I, in my heart of hearts, I think that they protected themselves because of the health factors, I think, more than is he good or not good. That's just my opinion personally. But
I mean, regardless, they did what they did. It covers both bases.
Right.
I mean, the health factors for him have never been
– they're not chronic. It's not the same thing. It just always seems to be something else.
If the most chronic thing about it is protecting him from himself, which admittedly they have not been able to do.
And he hasn't been able to do either. I mean, he has to take some ownership on in yourself as well.
Right. But my point is that they have not been able to correct that problem, and that's fine. But yeah. I don't think that
right.
– to me – the injuries are a concern, but the major thing was, you know, I don't know. They knew that they were in a tough spot. They made him bet on himself, and it's not like he blew them away. You know, he wasn't throwing for 500 yards most games or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Had that been the case, we might have seen a different contract, I think.
I think they're also betting on the health and backstopping themselves and also betting on that they would have better pieces around them. You know, a Daniel Jones with a better offensive line, a Daniel Jones with a better receiving core, a Daniel Jones with better tight ends.
Right.
You know, a Daniel Jones who finally has a year two, three, and four with the same offensive coordinator and same head coach. I think there is a lot of upside still to the Daniel Jones story that, you know, they were not anywhere near ready to pull a cord on and say, you know, we might have our guy. But the most important thing that this franchise probably has done has – and also the other thing I want to ask you for you, Grump, is you know, there's a lot of revisionist history out there now. It's, well, if they would have just franchised Jones and then, you know, paid Barkley, they wouldn't have been in this situation right now with Daniel Jones. Do you – feel like in hindsight they should have done that, or do you even at the time you think that was the right move to do what they did, or how do you feel about all of that?
I think that a quarterback holding out is much more effective than a running back holding out.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell knows if franchising the quarterback was going to work?
Right.
Who's to say that he was going to play on that tag any more than like, you know, Barkley? You know, five running backs, all who were like Pro Bowlers or something like that, held a meeting on what they were going to do about the value of a running back, and literally nothing came of it. If you think five quarterbacks got together, something would have happened. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's
well, let's put it this way. Let's say they franchised Daniel Jones last year, and they stayed on the franchise tag, and now he's a free agent, and he got hurt and everything. Arguably, the Giants are in worse situation now than having him for the contract, because they probably would not be re-signing Daniel Jones. They don't have Tyrod Taylor anymore. They're not in a position really to get the franchise quarterback of their choosing right now. And I would argue they'd probably be looking in the scrap heap to get a holdover quarterback just to get them through. And are you going to go through and draft another Daniel Jones type of, you know, reach a bit? So I'm sure
naysayers would say, well, then you would just re-sign Jones on the cheap or something like that. But that's just silly. I mean, like, who's to say he wants to come back after being given the franchise tag? If that's the case.
If that's the case, then why are people complaining right now? It's like we already have Daniel Jones signed.
The reason people are complaining now is because the Giants sucked last year, and they don't know if it's going to get better. So it's easier to complain than to just admit that sometimes shit happens.
Yeah,
not saying that the Daniel Jones contract is great or anything like that, but it was a protective move that they did, and they still got shafted. And sometimes that happens. Yeah. You know,
And right now, this is not the time of the year I go back and cry about the past and be mad because we sucked last year. This is the time of the season where we are building a roster for 2024 and going forward. So to me, if you have, you know, sour grapes over last year, you got to get over yourself and think about what are the best moves to this team going forward.
So then why would Rich Eisen say it? Where does this all come from?
Because Rich Eisen is ultimately in the entertainment business, and unfortunately, we live in a world now where there's a lot of competition for eyeballs and clicks and likes, and nobody's immune to that anymore. And I think it's something that has generated – we've talked more about Rich Eisen on this show than we probably have in the history of Just Giants combined.
That's a travesty on our part.
The
fact that that's the first time I heard that Rich Eisen story, and it was from a long time ago, that's our fault.
Yeah, exactly. But that's my point, though, is that he has carved out a piece on Giants Twitter and NFL Twitter right now. It is a major talking point for the night, and I don't think he lied just to get clicks, but I think the maybe intended consequence of saying it is that is. Now, all of a sudden now it's like, oh, is Rich Eisen more plugged in than we thought he was, as opposed to just being an anchor? Is he dipping into, Schefter territory of getting inside scoops or not? Who knows?
No, I mean, my honest thought is that he heard something that along the lines of that the Giants were very serious about looking at quarterbacks this year. And when he inquired further, the indication he got is that they were ready to move on. And by that doesn't mean move on in 2024, like cut Daniel Jones or anything. It means make the move for the future. Daniel Jones is no longer viewed as the future in New York. And that, I think, very well may be. It's certainly my view on the situation. I don't know about yours, but that's kind of how I view it. I'm sure that's how the Giants view it. I'm sure Joe Shane and Brian Daboll were humbled just a little bit last year.
I got to be very honest. When I first saw the tweet or the reference to the tweet, I thought it was a Wesley Steinberg tweet. It just came across.
It was like over the top level of certainty.
Exactly. And I had to double check to see was that, you know, the genius of that account. But no, it was not. So then I was like, hmm.
Can you imagine if Rich Eisen ran the Wes Steinberg account? Wow. How amazing that would be.
I have an announcement to make here on the Just Giants podcast. The Cranky Fan is a facade for my real account.
It's a Scooby-Doo moment there. Yeah. I think the thing that infuriated me about the Rich Eisen thing was that he didn't say anything. Like, he said it with clear certainty in his voice or whatever, right? And his words. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he said anything that was like, crazy. Like, the Giants are moving on from Daniel Jones? Whoa, crazy. Yeah. I've only been talking about them drafting a quarterback for months. Like,
can I zag for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead, zag.
Because this is smokescreen season. Do you think it's possible that we actually put that out there as a total bullshit cloud to, you know, get people thinking that we are really looking for a quarterback when we really aren't? No. Again, we're drafting sixth. We're not drafting third. And maybe, you know, they're thinking, really, I want to get, you know, the wide receiver of my dreams, or making some sort of move possibly down a bit. And they just want to, you know, just muddy the waters, because this really should be muddy watering season, not, you know, water clarity season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that it's possible, right? I think in the same vein today, I saw something that NFL insiders think that the first four picks are going to go QB, right? And that's not – first of all, people reacting to that like it's something special. I don't know what drafts you watch every single year. Every single year. I mean, look, come on. When are you going to – I don't understand when people are going to understand that quarterbacks are super valued and that they usually go very high.
Yeah, I mean, if you can monetize a quarterback like a stock, you always want to buy stocks early before they shoot up, you know, their value. And to me, when you see like a J.J. McCarthy, or you see, you know, a quarterback like him that's like in October, second, third round pick, you know quarterbacks are always going to shoot up boards every single year. It's just – It's a rite of spring.
The J.J. McCarthy is a second round pick thing is a thing that is hilarious to me. I want someone to point out a flaw of his that makes him not worthy of a first round pick other than he didn't throw often. If you can find me a bunch of throws he threw poorly or some things that he done very clearly badly that tells me he is not a first round pick. And remember, these are millions and millions of dollars that people are gambling with that they routine. Tim Tebow was a first round pick.
Yeah. The biggest thing that, you know, you hear more often than not about JJ McCarthy, you know, not from the super draft Knicks, but just, you know, the talking heads, he's a winner.
Yeah.
And guess what? Being a winner, like to your point, made Tim Tebow a first round pick. It wasn't his mechanics. It wasn't his velocity. It wasn't any of the stuff. It was intangibles. It was, well, he's a winner. And he was. But you know something? Stetson Bennett also was a winner. Stetson Bennett won 2 national titles and he won 3 SEC titles. And his drunk ass, I don't even think he's on a roster right now.
But
so.
See, there were obvious flaws with Stetson Bennett. You can point to things and be like, I have not seen anyone point to a routine thing that J.J. McCarthy always does that is not going to cut it in the NFL. It's really hard to – there's no obvious thing. You can find things, but there's nothing crazy obvious.
I don't want to make this a quarterback draft preview show, but, like, is he someone that kind of projects to you as, like, you know, if I have the 4th pick in the draft, I need to take this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think he is the 4th best quarterback in this draft right now.
Fourth best quarterback, but is he the 4th pick worthiest?
I mean, yeah, if you're desperate. If you're picking 5th and you need a quarterback and the quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3 and now 4 is on the clock, are you biting your fingernails? I would be.
Are you trading up for him?
I'm not necessarily saying that, but I'm saying that if you're hoping that he doesn't go 4th so that you can take him at 5. Yeah.
I mean, to your point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I do agree that this might be smoke for a wide receiver. I do think the Giants are looking for a quarterback, and I think that's what makes it brilliant smoke, because it's not entirely smoke. There is a little bit of fire there. I think they are looking for a quarterback. But if the offshoot of that is that, you know, let's just say the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4. You realize that means Marvin Harrison Jr. is going 5th or 6th. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers. Right. So where's the loss there? And let's just say no one takes this. Let's say that the fire department doesn't respond to the smoke. So is the worst thing that J.J. McCarthy falls to 6th? It's a win-win maneuver for the Giants. So anybody who quoted the Rich Eisen thing was like, well, there it is. There's the proof. You guys are the worst detectives of all time.
Yeah, I mean, this front office seems to be pretty smart. They seem to be pretty savvy. These aren't, you know, 65-year-old GM. This is not Dave Gettleman who wears his heart on his sleeve for somebody. This is young guys who've been brought up in a new generation of how the league works, how media works, and I have full trust in their ability to get who they want. Now, you know, their evaluation and stuff, that's a different story. I'm not dissing them or anything, but playing the game, I have complete confidence. This is a very smart group we have running this team right now.
Wasn't the complaint during the Reese Ross era that everyone knew who we were drafting on draft night? I feel like I remember that pretty clearly.
Well, this Gettleman. Is a good thing. Yeah. I mean, Gettleman with Saquon.
Sure.
I mean, yeah.
The only people who didn't know what was happening were the Giants fans who didn't want to believe it.
Exactly.
Anything else from the combine? Saquon Barkley contract stuff kind of came out that the Giants were not intending to franchise tag him given the increase in the cap and therefore the higher franchise number. They're letting him kind of explore free agency, and then they'll probably, it's kind of a handshake agreement that he'll bring whatever the offer is to the Giants for them to match or decline.
I'm perfectly fine with that. I think I've been on the record, my feelings of what they should do with him short term and long term. And, you know, if some team wants to overspend for him, good luck to him. But I just don't think where we are right now, you know, with the way last year was, the way this roster is currently constructed, the needs that have to be done in the offensive line, the needs we have with still getting skill position players, I just don't think we're at a luxury to spend that much money on a guy who's probably already seen the apex of his career already. So I'm perfectly fine. You know, who knows? The wild card is everybody's assuming that the market is going to be like this ridiculous amounts of money. And I'm not so sure that he or any running back is going to find the money that they want. And if that's the case, then, you know, I'm more than happy bringing him back just as long as it works for us.
I really don't know what's going to happen to him in this offseason. I'm curious to find out. But I don't have a problem with that. I mean, let's look logically. We're in the middle of doing this in an episode-by-episode basis. But I think the general feeling from both of us is that this is a roster with a shitload of holes. And it doesn't make sense after what happened last year. It doesn't make sense to hold on to essentially, if you were balancing a checkbook at home, this would be the unnecessary sports car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not going to help you with what you need. Right now, you kind of need to worry about a truck to haul things and renovate your house. You don't need a sports car to pick up a lady in.
And I also don't need a 2015 sports car either has miles on it.
Ooh, gotcha. Well, speaking of old sports cars, we don't need Darren Waller. it came out that he was contemplating retirement, but he has since contacted his agents, let them know that he intends to play, and so he will play for the Giants next year. This was always a concern, right? Like, Darren Waller, I don't think his heart was ever really in football. He was just a really great athlete. I think you can usually tell, and like, this is a shitty, presumptive thing to say, but people who are hurt all the time and we bitch about, like Saquon Barkley, hurt all the time, but not inactive very often, right? He plays through injury. He comes back from injury soon. It is important to Saquon Barkley that he is a great football player. Darren Waller, hurt all the time, gone for random amounts of time, really no prognosis on whether he's getting better or not or moving better. It just gives the vibe to me, and again, I admit that this is kind of shitty to presume anything about people's injuries, but it gives the vibe to me that you are not as concerned about that and you're more concerned about your long-term health, which is not a bad thing, but people who love the game always kind of put that thing on the back burner. Like, they're trying to get back and they have to be held back.
Well, remember, Waller has had personal issues in the past. He's had, you know, issues with alcohol and stuff. So his worldview might be completely different now than it was when he was 17 and 18 years old. So I always am in the opinion that once somebody's like thinking about retiring, it's almost impossible to put that toothpaste back in the tube. And, to me, when someone says they're gone, but I changed my mind, part of them is gone. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, we all said it when the trade happened that there was a risk involved with him. Can he stay on the field? That's the reason why, you know, he's not, you know, a perennial all pro and potentially a Hall of Famer. The guy's got all the physical tools in the world, but, you know, we see directly the, you know, the inability to stay on the field. We don't know behind the scenes how much of a struggle it is for him to get back onto the field. If it's a simple thing as, well, I'm just not feeling better, like my arm isn't better or my knee isn't better, but who knows? I think we should make all the preparations for life after Waller because, again, if we're talking in early March, I might retire. Guess what could happen the week before training camp starts? He might say, change my mind again. So my feeling is, in my head, he's already gone, and we should kind of start moving on without him.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Darren Waller, to me, was the sports car rental. Like, he was a rent-a-car, you know what I mean? Like, and he always was viewed that way. I don't think that he was brought in here to be a foundational piece or anything like that. I think that that was part of that little window they had with Daniel Jones, which I understand was a four-year deal, but I don't think they ever anticipated he would be here for all 4 years.
Let's put ourselves back in the place of this time last year. I mean, we can go back and rerun last year's show right about now, and our feelings were coming off winning 11 games, a playoff win, second year with Daniel Jones. We were going to have a second year with, hopefully with Evan Neal being better and all these different things. And we had visions of grandeur. And a guy like him, you're right. You go out to the expensive car rental place and you get that Porsche because now it's time to drive it. Now that we're kind of going back to driver's education, you don't learn how to drive and learn how to parallel park with a Porsche. You get a 73 Pinto and you beat the shit out of it until you're ready to move on.
No, exactly. It wasn't a bad decision to get him, but it was always a conditional decision to get him. And
yeah. With risk, we knew it.
Yeah, and it came with his own risk, and it came with the whole temporary window. You know what I mean? Like, that window shut pretty quickly last year. So I think they were already kind of exploring life at the tight end position. I know you and I have talked candidly off air about the tight end position. Going back to last year, I'm sure I asked you, you know, hey, you're in the SEC. Would you swing for Brock Bowers, maybe, sort of? You know, I remember asking you those questions back in, like, October. So, yeah, and if I'm asking them, then the Giants are doing their due diligence as well. So, how I feel about Darren Waller, I mean, I guess he's here for next year, but just assume that he's gone. I mean, I'm viewing Darren Waller and Daniel Jones the same way. Sure, they're under contract, whatever, and it's too soon to do anything about somebody you've already got under contract. When you got 50 million other problems that are not under contract, you might as well just kind of, all right, fine, whatever. We'll deal with this next year or whatever. That's kind of how I'm viewing Darren Waller. Since he's said he's coming back fine, whatever, you run with it.
Yeah, I'm a little more pessimistic on Waller than Daniel Jones. I'm expecting Daniel Jones, once he's cleared to play and healthy and good to go, he is our starting quarterback next year. And I'm also not – I'm not shutting on the door on the fact that this is Daniel Jones' last year with the Giants. I mean, his career could, you know, zigs and zags, and next year could be a zag. And, you know, so – but I really – I am very 50-50 on if we'll ever see Waller ever wearing number 12 again with the Giants. So I don't put them exactly in the same boat, but maybe in the same marina.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Yeah, I do agree with that. Right. But it's a similar situation, I think.
Yep.
And I don't feel really bad about it. I think that getting Waller, I think that the contract structure that they gave Daniel Jones, it all made sense for the window that they had. And remember, it was sort of a
balancing act.
But it was a garbage position to be in as a new GM. I mean, the only upshot being, hey, we're not going to blame you in this first year if anything goes wrong.
Yep.
So, you know, I kind of hinted at this roster needing things all over the place. And we're gonna get into the defensive line now. I think the defensive line is interesting because it was probably the deepest position on the roster last year. And then midway through the year, they got rid of Leonard Williams. And then when you looked at the contracts that remained, it was kind of like, that's not that deep anymore. So let's take a look at the guys under contract right now. Let's start with.
Yeah, let's before we get into this, let's remind everybody of what we're doing in this exercise. Is we're going through each position group and we're assigning everybody that was on the roster at the end of last year one of three categories: someone you build around, somebody that's good enough for now, or somebody that we need to move on from. We're factoring in their performance on the field, their salary, their contract situation, their age, and their health. So, you know, using those parameters, we're kind of classifying those. At the end of the year, we're trying to make a decision. What is the state of this roster? Are we really in a rebuild? How much of a rebuild? How close are we to having the roster? So that's what we're doing here.
And let's take the guys under contract first. So biggest name, biggest guy, biggest star, maybe, Dexter Lawrence, big number 97, sexy Dexy. This is a foundational piece that you build around. This is a guy who is the anchor of the defensive line. He's statistically been better than Aaron Donald, I think, 2 years in a row. Last year was the first time it was actually acknowledged by people. I think the year before, if he wasn't statistically better, he was statistically on par, and it seemed like only Giants fans knew that.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's a build-around guy. I don't think he gets the national sexiness appeal from the media and from announcers and stuff, but maybe because he's inside, I don't know, but he is absolutely the foundation for this defense. There's no doubt about it for me. He's a build-around guy.
I want to say it's because the Giants aren't very good that he doesn't get the attention, but that's not really true, because I think it's just – it's partly because he's inside. It's partly because casual fans don't understand a good defensive tackle when they see one unless he's actively making a sack or a stop for a loss. And I think that also he's just not as star power. Like, for instance, Kayvon Thibodeau is plenty in the media.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just spent 20 minutes on this show talking about Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
A guy that gets so much media attention for, if the same team that isn't very good. I just think it's a position where it's not as, you know, use the word again, sexy. Somebody flying off the edge and just, you know, unabated to the quarterback and knocking the hell out of somebody. It's not someone that, you know, like a Micah Parsons kind of drops back into coverage all of a sudden and has a pick. It's just kind of like a lunch pail position where every play you're just grinding with an offensive lineman and you're trying to, you know, stop the run or things. So it's those who know, and those who know the most are the ones who are paying him a lot of money to do what he does, to be rewarded for what he does.
Yeah, and I think there's no question that they want Dexter Lawrence here for a long time. While he's in his prime, they want him in blue.
Absolutely.
They went out of their way to get Raheem Nunez-Roches last year, and I think that he's done a pretty good job. I think it took him a little while to get warmed up to the defense, but he came on strong late. He was also kind of brought in sort of a rotational role last year. They were deep at the position early on, mm-hmm. you know, with Leonard mm-hmm. Williams, A'shaun Robinson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They had plenty of stars on there. He just had to come in a...
He was a little banged up when he first came in too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But I still think that he's good for now. They've got him for two more years, I think. And I think that helps anchor that line. He's a solid player. He's not going to blow anyone away, but he will help stop the run, which is something that I haven't really done a good job of under.
Yeah, I guess the fifth criteria that we should say for how we're evaluating these is, what is your role? And I think for what his role is on this team, I have him as good for now as well.
DJ Davidson, big man, kind of on the older side. I think he was like 24 or 25 when they drafted him out of Arizona State. I have him as replacement level. I think if he's there, you live with it. It's not such a dire replacement. But if you're in a position where, let's say it's the sixth round and whatever, I mean, there's a good chance that you find somebody in the sixth round to play defensive line better than DJ Davidson, and you're perfectly fine pulling the trigger on something like that, because what the hell else are you going to get in the sixth round anyway that's going to have a major impact? Nothing. So, but for now, DJ Davidson can fill that role, you know, as we're talking about that fifth criteria of role. He's a big man. He's a big man in a rotational role. that needs to occupy space. And he does that well enough. But if you can find something better, you find something better, because it's probably – I don't think you have to break the bank to find something better.
So you're saying he's a good for now or a move on? I'm confused.
I mean, he's a
move on. You're kind of
in
that gray area.
Yeah, but it's a move on, but it's not a dire move on. That's – yeah. You know what I mean? Like
– I have him as a good for now, and he, to me, is literally good for now. I mean, it's just like we probably could do better within him, but, you know, he's still on a rookie contract. He's still in that role where, you know, maybe, you know, if we're having this conversation next year and he's still giving the same, you know, productivity that he is right now, he's an absolute move on. But I think I don't really necessarily – again, with the way the salary cap is and everything, and I don't – for what he is, I can live with him for one more year.
Jordan Riley, for me, was their seventh-round pick. This, for me, is the good-for-now guy, because I don't think that there's too much different there. But Jordan Riley, even last year, I think was playing well enough that you could make a case that he should be getting more snaps. So I'm interested to see what his role is this coming year and under a new defensive coordinator entirely. So it's kind of difficult to say what any of these guys are going to do.
yeah, that's very true. Very true.
But I'm, for me, Jordan Riley is the guy that I am feeling much more strongly about good for now. I agree with everything you said about DJ Davidson. That was a better assessment of what I was trying to say, but Jordan Riley, I'm putting way above that. He's younger a little bit. He's on he's less far into his contract than DJ Davidson is. And I think that he's already shown that he's a little bit better than him too.
If DJ Davidson is a good for now in pencil, Jordan Riley is a good for now in pen.
Guys whose contracts are expiring. A'shaun Robinson. He took a while to sign here. I think he went on multiple visits at two different times with the Giants before he finally signed. And that always felt like a move that was – he got convinced that the Giants were going to do something next year. And to be frank, all of us were convinced the Giants were going to do something next year. When it didn't happen, it pretty much told me that the door was closing on A'shaun Robinson. I have him as a good for now. His contract is over. I doubt that he re-signs with the Giants. But if he's open to it, I am certainly open to keeping him.
You have almost the exact same notes I do as well for him for good for now. That, you know, I think if this situation was – if this was last year and last year wasn't the expectations of last year, we probably never would have got him. I think he's going to probably try to test the waters to find a better situation for him, a better chance possibly to win. I wouldn't break the bank on him, but I think for what I think we can get him for, I think I would keep him. For now,
not that it makes a difference, not much of a difference anyway. But when you play for the New York Giants, are you paying New York taxes or New Jersey taxes?
Say that again.
If you play for the New York Giants, that's your employer, right?
Yes.
Are you paying New York taxes or New Jersey taxes?
New Jersey.
Okay.
You work in New Jersey. Yeah.
Just checking.
Hey, if that's the case, we're calling this show the Florida Just Giants show, so we can say we live in Florida and not pay income tax. Yeah.
What I was going to say, like I said, we're talking about like a hair's worth of difference between the two states and their incredibly high taxes. But I mean, he could find even a similar tenuous situation, like maybe they'll be good. But if he's going to make the full amount of his money going to Tampa Bay, where he's got no income tax, he's going to do that. I mean,
remember the way contracts and tax law is written. It's based, you get paid 17 weeks a year, mm-hmm. right? Your paychecks.
Yes.
And it's based on where you work that week. So if a game you play, and if you're a member of the Bucks and you're playing the Giants up here at the Meadowlands, you are going to have New Jersey taxes taken out of your paycheck.
Right. But 8 to 9 games will be Florida games.
That's true. That's true.
So, I mean, It certainly factors in. And mm-hmm. What about like all the other things, like the bonuses and shit like that? All the other portions of their contract that is not part of their week-to-week salary?
I
would assume that they would all be under the umbrella of the income tax from your state.
I would imagine so, yes.
So, I mean, you make a valid point, but regardless, I still think that if he finds a similar situation in a better state like that, He's going to take that. He's just at the point of his career where money is just money and winning. And right now we're not winning in New York. So,
yeah,
you know, the money's going to have to be great.
And don't underestimate the money part when you get to these guys who are starting moving up in age too. That's big because their window of opportunity for making the money that they are now is decreasing every year. So,
and a guy like A'shaun Robinson is probably not swimming in endorsement deals the way that, you know,
yeah,
Russell Wilson is. You know what I mean?
So, mm-hmm,
Do we want to get to the edge guys? I kept them separately, but I can throw them in there if you want.
I kept them. I have them in my evaluation today, so let's do it.
All right. So then let's jump back to the under contract portion of it. Carlos Basham, Boogie Basham. I have him as get the hell off my roster. To me, this was Joe Shane banking on his Buffalo buddies and their assessment of Boogie Basham. Somebody I never liked in the draft, never did shit in the NFL, and continues to not do shit. And this was a non-helpful addition to the roster.
The guy we got in the middle of the season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, middle of the season guys usually are filling roles that we need right now. So, yeah, we can move on from him.
Azeez Ojulari. To me, this is I guess it's a good for now, but you're looking to replace him. You know what I mean? He has proven himself to not be reliable enough to be a full-time starter. He is going to have to be, if he's on your roster, reduced to be the third edge rusher, the guy who's brought in on pass rushing situations only. And it's not because he's not a good run defender. He is. It's a problem of if he takes 80% of snaps, he will be hurt 80% of the time. That just seems to be the evidence we have. He is a very, very, very productive edge rusher, though. So I have him as good for now. He's on the last year of his deal, right? So I think that, you know, you got him, you keep him. Who yep. knows what happens next year?
I have good for now in my note. Go prove yourself. Stay healthy.
Yeah. Kayvon Thibodeau, I guess this, you know, on the rookie deal, this is a foundational piece. He hasn't proven that just yet. To be fair, he's played in a system that does not glamorize the edge position, and he still managed to get double-digit sacks last year, despite that, in a bad year and on a bad team. I'm going to give him the foundational designation, though I think that he still needs one more year to really show that he is a true star on this team.
And I have him as a build around, but I'm a little stronger than you. I think he's suffering from perception. I think he's suffering from expectations that I don't think are really fair. I think based upon that we whiffed on Micah Parsons, I think that Giant fans think, well, this is our Micah Parsons. And there is really only one of him in this league. And I think he's, you know, he's still young. He's still disruptive. He, to your point exactly, which I also have in my notes here, is like, this is not the, what he was in under the wing system was not one he's going to shine in. And maybe that's the case now. But I think that there's all the potential in the world for the guy. I think people just, you know, I think they were expecting to get Lawrence Taylor. And, you know, let the guy play. The guy, you know, how many sacks did he have last year? 11, 12 in that range?
11, 11 and a half.
Yeah, that's pretty good productivity. Maybe we're in a situation, again, we have a whole new evaluation of the defense and what guys do and what they do best. And I think you're going to see a jump up from him this year. And he also seems to make the big play at the right time. Like sometimes true. Sometimes he might disappear, but some guys are gamers. And he is a gamer. And hopefully we're in more positions this year where he can make a gamer play as opposed to us getting our asses kicked and it doesn't matter anymore. So I have him as a build around and a pretty solid build around for me.
And then I think the last guy on our list is a guy under the contract expiring tab, and that is Jahad Ward, Hottie. I actually like Hottie. I think that he's a good run defender on the edge. He holds contain, very disciplined. He's a pretty sure tackler. I like that he's a violent, mean, angry player on defense. I think that that's a plus. He might get penalized maybe once or twice more than you'd really want, but I like that. Nevertheless, that's a move on. That was always a move on. Jahad Ward was you know, playing probably more than he needed to because of Aziz Ojulari's injuries. But if you have Ojulari under contract and you don't have Jahad Ward, then you replace Jahad Ward. This is replacement level for me.
I have him as well. I mean, if he was a couple of years younger or if he was still under contract, I think I'd have him as good for now. But I think being 30 years old and being unrestricted a free agent tells me we could probably do it younger, cheaper, and probably better out there, even by drafting.
And that moves us into replacements. So when you look at this defensive line, you know, we talked about edge rushers, we talked about big guys, we talked about other kinds of defensive tackles that are not big guys. What's missing for you? Because for me, when I look at it, the biggest missing piece, you know, other than, you know, a quality edge rusher, which I wasn't really prepared to talk about the edge, but Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams in that five technique, who's long, can rush the passer and also, you know, be a stout run defender. He's got long arms. I think that that's the thing that's the most missing from this team.
Mm-hmm. And the defense suffered once he was traded.
Right. Yeah, and this is not a discussion on the trade or whether they should have or shouldn't have.
We're here. Yeah. This is, again, we're not crying about the past. We're talking about what do we do in the future. The only problem is to get someone that kind of fills those roles and fills it with the quality he did is they're expensive.
Usually, they're, yeah.
There are a lot of trade capital you have to give up. They're very, very expensive on the open market. That makes me wonder if there's like a dark horse candidate for our first round draft pick is drafting inside like that. I mean, all the oxygen is about quarterback, wide receiver, but you know, to have a bookend to Dexter Lawrence on the inside that's young, cheap. Relatively, you know, for being a draft pick and someone that we can get years out of to develop chemistry with you guys is something that, you know, we may want to consider. We've complained on this show before about this team being built from the outside in. This is an opportunity possibly to build from the inside out.
That's interesting. I don't think in their first round pick, unless they move backwards or if they jump up from the second round back into the first or something like that, which is not an insane thing. You know, the first round pick comes with one very, very, very valuable thing. And that's a fifth year option.
The fifth year option. Yeah. So, But think about it. If we're drafting six right now and we're expecting a run on quarterbacks and then probably then a little run on wide receiver, we could have our pick of the litter of, you know, best available one.
Still way too soon at six for me.
Yeah, I know. But maybe that's something where
– I mean, you know, if you're like, well, all the quarterbacks we wanted are gone and, you know, we don't really like Romo Dunze or something like that. And, you know, Marvin Harrison's gone and so is Malik Nabers and you want to move backwards. Now we're talking, you know, whatever. But
but if you identify somebody that you really like, but maybe not at six, but like if you try, you know, take them. Sure. Really, yeah. I'm just saying, I said this is like a dark horse. This is not something I would advocate doing, but it would not. Some people are going to be like, what? But I'd be like kind of sitting in the corner watching the draft like,
Well, look, the same people that said what are the same people who told you that Dexter Lawrence was a two-down run stuffer, which I heard for like 3 years from you liars, and then all of you stopped saying it all of a sudden and pretended like it never happened. I was the one person that I defended that pick from day one.
You did.
I was like, am I the only one that saw him play like all the positions along the defensive line, or is it just me, or whatever? Yeah, so there's some really interesting guys here. In day one, we're talking draft here, for the defensive line, day one I really only have the guy from Illinois. I just did on my channel, the Grump channel, defensive line assessment of the top 16 guys that I could find. And Jerzon Newton from Illinois was the only guy I really graded out to be a day one guy. But there is a giant cluster of guys that I graded out to be high-end day two guys, which is round two. And that would be guys like Darius Robinson from Missouri, who kind of is sort of a defensive end. He's a bit long. He's about 6'5", I'm pretty sure. So
I remember him. Yeah.
So he's really, really fast. I think he projects more so as a 4-3 defensive end, but not entirely. I think he could kind of be a 5 technique guy that Leonard Williams sort of was. He would have to bulk up a little bit. Braden Fisk from Florida State, more so Western Michigan. I know that'll be more palatable to you. He played Western Michigan up until his last year in training.
Well, I saw him also. And again, they brought in a bunch of transfers, especially on the defensive line. And those guys, you know, a whole bunch of them, like they're ready to play in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
And
he just tore up the combine, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw him in person against a third string quarterback and a beat up offensive line. And they completely dominated. It really was me. In fact, I had a nightmare. It was two nights ago about that game. So yeah,
he was at the Senior Bowl and looked really good too. Brandon Dorlus from Oregon, another guy who's kind of long. I view him as sort of like maybe like a third round guy, but I think that he could kind of play both those spots. Dwayne Carter from Duke is another guy that caught my eye. He's less long, you know. Him and Brandon Dorlus, I think, are like 6'3". We're getting down to normal defensive tackle sizes. But these guys are effective in the middle. They can rush the passer, and they can defend against the run. And that's really what is kind of missing. It's another body that is very, very effective at disrupting. Not necessarily a game breaker. We don't need two Dexter Lawrences on this roster, right?
You just need
enough people to let Dexter Lawrence get free.
And that's something against, you know, this little secret thing of mine of drafting a defensive line, a tackle so far up is right. You don't need your franchise guy. You have one. You need somebody that's good enough that if Dexter Lawrence takes away a lot of the attention, that they can go in there and kick ass.
And given that they only need him to do a little bit, let's just say, let's say they go quarterback at 6. Let's say the first pick in the second round is a really good wide receiver. And then the second pick in the second round is a really good offensive tackle, and now you're in the third round and all the defensive tackles are gone and you can't get a defensive tackle anymore. You can get a free agent for a 1 to 2 year deal and cover this gap, in my opinion. Do you agree with that?
I agree. Sure.
The list of guys I got feels really random, but all of them I think are going to cost like $7 million or less, so not breaking the bank. You're not breaking your ass for any of these guys. But I'm just going to list out some names here. Emmanuel Ogba, Manny Ogba, is somebody I've been a fan of since the draft. I think that he's an effective player. Marcus Davenport, another long guy, probably more of a defensive end than a 5 technique guy. Solomon Thomas from the Jets, I think is a really cheap guy that can go in there and be really effective against the run. Which, by the way, I have been watching running backs run right through the middle of our defense for far too long now. And one other guy that's a familiar guy, Jonathan Hankins.
Unrestricted free agent. How old is he?
28, I think. 28, 29,
that's it?
30. Somewhere in there.
Seems like a long time ago.
I don't believe
he's
31. I think he is 30 or 29, 28 in that little range there.
All right. I mean, again, not someone we're building for the next generation, but someone to get in there right away.
Right. And I think that all four of those guys can kind of fill that gap. Marcus Davenport is probably the most wonky, but I was trying to think outside the box. And I was really kind of looking at, you know, specifically the Leonard Williams type of guy, somebody who's a little bit longer, who has some flexibility along the line. Now, you know, this new defensive coordinator, I don't know, he might be a little bit more rigid with his
specifications.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He is going to be kind of tricky in dropping some randos into coverage. Like, you know, there might be some times Kayvon Thibodeau is dropping into coverage again, but.
Yeah. And again, this makes this exercise a little tricky for us that, you know, we haven't seen this defense in action. We haven't even seen a scrimmage or a fall camp practice with him. So, you know, we do this routine next year, and you know, we still have the same coaching staff. It'll be a little easier for us, but we'll do our best.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen very, very little, and you know, we can look at Titans tape if we want to, but you know, Brian Daboll came out and said that he wasn't going to recreate the Buffalo offense, and he wasn't going to recreate the Kansas City offense. He was going to make a new one for the Giants. So, I mean, I have to assume that there's at least a possibility that Bowen is going to make a defense cater around the talent he already has.
I would think so. I mean, unless you want to have a lot of pain the first year.
I don't really have anything else on this topic.
Me neither. So we just in review, we each had two guys that we consider building around. It's pretty interesting. We had the same selections for every single one of these. So we had two guys that we would build around. We have five guys that are good for now. We have three guys that we move on.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, wait, no. DJ Davidson, I said was good for now. You said move on. That's the only difference we have.
Yeah, that was – I think we were both describing
squishy.
The same gray area of where we
were. Yeah.
Agreed. And we kind of teased the edge group. We talked about the edge group, but we didn't talk about solutions for the edge group. That's going to be next week's episode, so it's probably going to be a little bit shorter. But we're probably going to have more other junk to talk about. I think that from the combine to the draft is like the longest period of smoke and nonsense.
that should be the title of our show, Smoke and Nonsense.
That should be our aliases.
Exactly.
Just Giants was smoking nonsense. While we may get a reprieve in the nonsense next week, it'll just be a shorter episode. But I'm anticipating that we're going to have nonsense either next week or the week after. So, and you know, it's our job to parse through the nonsense, right?
That's right. We are the smoke detectors. We are the fire extinguishers.
Smokey the Bear over here.
Only you could prevent it there, Grump.
Oh man. Alright, well the only thing I'm gonna prevent is this going over an hour. So
hey, nice work.
That's going to do it for us. Be sure to like, subscribe, tell a friend, etc. As a reminder, I have another channel, the Grump channel, where I'm going through week by week every Monday afternoon. I'm posting a new video on a new group. I just painstakingly went through 16 defensive linemen. Hint, I hate watching trench video. It's really, really tough for me to pay attention.
I had this World War I video I was going to show you. I guess you don't want to see that now.
No, I mean, it's not all that different. The results okay. are kind of the same. A lot of death and destruction and not a lot to write about. I went through it anyway, and I came away with some conclusions. So if you really want to know what I think about the top 16 guys that I could find in the defensive line, that's the place to do it. I've got some clips to back up some of the things I said.
Check it out.
Yeah. And we will be back next Tuesday morning with our edge group review and more smoke and nonsense, right?
That's right, smoke.
All right, nonsense. Let's get out of here. We'll see you guys next week. Until then, go Giants.
Go Giants.